tonight that I really want to remember. It's a perfect lesson for me right now. If the patient must change his mind in order to be healed, what does the teacher of God do? Can the teacher of God change the patient's mind for them? Certainly not. For those already willing to change their minds, the teacher of God has no function except to rejoice with them, for they have become teachers of God with him. The teacher of God has, however, a more specific function for those who do not understand what healing is. These patients don't realize that they've chosen sickness. On the contrary, they believe that the sickness has chosen them. Nor are they open-minded on this point. The body tells them what to do and they obey. They have no idea how insane this concept is. If they even suspected it, they would be healed. Yet they suspect nothing. To them, the separation is quite real. To those who believe that they are victims of the sickness, page 19. God's teachers come to represent another choice which they have forgotten. The simple presence of a teacher of God is a reminder. The teacher of God's thoughts ask for the right to question what the patient has accepted as true. As God's messengers, God's teachers are the symbols of salvation. They ask the patient for forgiveness for God's Son in his own name. God's messengers stand for the alternative. With God's word in their minds, they come in benediction not to heal the sick, but to remind them of the remedy that God has already given them. It is not their hands that heal. It's not their voice that speaks the word of God. They merely give what has been given them. Very gently, they call to their brothers to turn away from death. Behold, you Son of God, what life can offer you, would you choose sickness in place of this? Not once do the advanced teachers of God consider the forms of sickness in which their brother believes. To do this is to forget that all forms of sickness have the same purpose and therefore are not really different. They seek for God's voice in this person who would so deceive himself as to believe that God's Son can suffer. And they remind him that he didn't make himself and must remain as God created him. God's teachers recognize illusions can have no effect. The truth in their minds reaches out to the truth in the minds of their brothers so that illusions are not reinforced. The illusions are thus brought to truth. Truth is not brought to the illusion. So that's how the illusion or the sickness is dispelled. Not by the will of another, but by the union of one will with itself. And so this is the function of God's teachers. To see no will is separate from their own, nor theirs is separate from God's. So the function that we have with the people in our lives who seem to be going through pain or suffering in any way, is if a person already wants to change their mind, we said last week, we just rejoice with them. If they don't believe that they created it and they believe that they're a victim, then your presence and my presence just represents another choice. And I like how he says that our simple presence is a reminder, and that in our thoughts, he says, we don't join with whatever they're going through in our thoughts. And so inside our minds, we are remembering the alternative, which is that they are children of God, that they, in their true nature, are still whole, and that they are still healed. And that last paragraph, to me, is the one I really want to focus on. It's hard for people to be quiet and to remember the truth. Most people feel like, you know, they've got to somehow convince the other person through words. And the Course is saying, we just stand for the alternative. And if we'll just remember God and remember the truth for them and speak the word of God and give that love and that support, then we are actually playing the role that we need to play in that situation. And in the other parts of the book, he says, if there's something that you need to say or something that you need to do, you'll be told what that is. But the last paragraph is the one that's the challenge. He says, not once do the advanced teachers of God consider the forms of sickness in which their brother believes. That sentence is an incredible sentence. Most people are focused on what they think is wrong with the person. And he says, once you become advanced, you wouldn't focus on any particular form of what the person is going through. because the purpose of any kind of sickness, the purpose of any kind of upset, is the same purpose, which is to make them think that their bodies, to make them forget that they're spirit, to make them forget their true identity. So it doesn't matter what the person is going through from a Course perspective, it still has the same purpose, which is to make them think that they're separate from God, separate from love, and separate from the truth. So he says, so therefore, no matter what we're going through, it's not really different. If the purpose is the same, then no matter what you're going through, it's not really different, even though it might look like it's different, because the overall purpose is separation. The purpose is fear. The purpose of the ego is to make us think that we're separate from God. The Course in Miracles, to me, I can see how it could be one of the most difficult teachings that anybody could ever try to study if they're not really clear what the purpose of the Course is. And the purpose of the Course is to heal our relationship with God, to heal our relationship with our Source, to help us remember who we really are, and to learn how to forgive, which is to correctly perceive. So its premise is basically that the part of our man that doesn't believe that we are one with God is constantly trying to give us examples of how we are separate from God, and how we are not spirit, and how we are not these invulnerable, unlimited beings. And so what he's saying is that no matter what form of upset I have, it has the same purpose, to make me forget the truth. No matter how many different ways I come up with doing that, the purpose of everything that doesn't bring me peace is to make me temporarily forget the power of God and to totally focus on the outer and totally focus on the illusion and totally focus on what's outside of myself as being the solution or the answer to the problem. So he was saying that not once do the advanced teachers of God consider the forms of sickness in which the person believes. Because if I'm focusing on what you're upset about or what you're sick about, he says I'm forgetting that all forms of sickness and all forms of upset have the same purpose, so they're not really different. So what I want to do is seek for God's voice in you who believes that you can suffer. And so he says, I have to lend my mind, because don't forget that in the previous paragraph he was talking about that we represent that alternative. So he said, in my mind, I've got to remember you didn't make yourself. So if there's anybody in your life that's going through any kind of pain or any kind of suffering in any way, our job is to remember, no matter what they think they're going through, they didn't make themselves, and that they still remain the same way God created them, which is healed and whole and an unlimited, invulnerable spiritual being. And that's hard to do if it's a very special person or it's a very special relationship. But that doesn't make it any less the truth. Just because I don't necessarily like something, or if something isn't necessarily easy for me, still doesn't make it any less the truth. And so the Course says that I have to recognize that whatever it is that they think they're going through, it doesn't really have a real effect on who they are as a child of God, as who they are as a spiritual being. And he says that's how you keep from reinforcing the illusion that they're going through. That doesn't mean you don't have your feelings about it. It doesn't mean that you repress how you feel about it. It doesn't mean that you try to be positive to the point that you not admit that if you are troubled or if it is bringing you some kind of pain, you're pretending that it don't. It just means that you remember the truth about that person in spite of whatever seems like it's going on. And he says then when you do that, then you're bringing the illusion to the truth instead of bringing truth to the illusion. Bringing the illusion to the truth is I'm taking what it is that's not giving you peace, and then I'm bringing it to the truth that I'm learning from God. Bringing the truth to an illusion is you're going through something that's a lack of peace, and then I help make it realer to you than it already is. That's bringing truth. I'm making the illusion true. You know, whatever you're going through, I'm making it real. To bring the illusion to the truth is to remember that you still remain as God created you, and there's nothing you can do to change the fact that you're still as God created you. Do we believe it? Do we see it all the time? Do we feel it all the time? No. And I think that's what, because we don't believe it. Because our experience has taught us we're a body. You know, everybody around us believe, in most cases, believe that they're bodies. It's like, why? Would just basically go back to our learning and our experience. You know, everything in our experience is from the day you know, if you look at TV, you know, you'll see, you know, especially if you watch the news, it's funny. When I watch the news in order to practice, not bringing truth to the illusion, every commercial is usually some kind of a pharmaceutical medical commercial. That's where all of them are located. They're all located in news shows, but they figure you're going to get depressed and get sick by watching that stuff. So it's the best time in the world for all the pharmaceutical companies to share. So what are they saying over and over again? You are a body that can be harmed. You are a body that can be harmed. You are a body that can be harmed. You are a body. You are separate. You are a body. You are vulnerable. You are a body. You are a body. And that's the message of the separated ego mind, is that you are a body. You are separate. You're in this body. You can be hurt. It's that the Course teaches, it's that idea that keeps us separate from God. It's that idea that keeps us separate from love, which is that we are limited, vulnerable beings. So when a person is believing that about themselves, it's obvious that our job would be to remember that they're more than what it is they think that they're going through. Does that make sense to everybody? You know, I think that what that could be done, regardless of what the person believes, that could really be done even regardless of what I believe. Like you know, I have on black pants. The fact that I have on black pants is a fact. Now, if I didn't believe I had on black pants, I'm colorblind, would that make it any less true? No. It wouldn't make it any less true. So the person that would be the helpful person would be the one who would perceive the truth even when I was deceiving myself about it. And whether they believed it or not, it wouldn't change the color of my pants. So the idea that someone has to always believe something for it to be true is a totally inaccurate perception of the truth. You know, that's a very popular idea. It's like, it's not true unless you believe it. That's a lie. That's crazy. It's not, something isn't not true unless you believe it. You know, there are, the Course is saying that there is a reality. There are facts. There are truths that are beyond our agreement or disagreement. But our beliefs determine how we perceive and interpret our experience. That's how what you believe is true for you, because you're going to see it that way. But it doesn't necessarily make it true. So one of the most advanced levels that we go through in our spiritual development is learning how to perceive beyond appearances and to be able to remember the truth regardless of what the appearance looks like. And that's what he says, that's basically the function of a teacher of love, is to remember the truth for everyone, even if you don't necessarily feel it and even if they don't necessarily believe it. And for people who also want to remember the truth, he says that our role with those people is just to rejoice with them, to be happy with them, and to support them in that. So those are the two basic perceptual attitudes that we're supposed to take about what's going on here. So on Wednesday, we, you know, I always try to open it up for more questions or more discussion, which is different from analyzation and which is different from fixing. So everybody pretty clear on what that particular page is saying? Not that you believe all of it, but are you pretty clear on what it's saying?
Is that like involved? I'm hearing it like I'm involved, but I'm detached from the story. Involved detachment. I'm involved in what you're sharing with me.
Right.
And I'm detached from the actual story of what you're sharing, and I'm holding the space of this perception of truth.
Yes, completely.
Okay.
That's exactly what it is.
I mean, you're like going and watching this story just like unfold before my eyes, and I'm compassionate and empathetic.
Right.
But I'm detached from what's happened.
Yeah, you're not. You separate the person from their story. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not my story. I might have a story, and I might be experiencing my story, but I'm not my story. And an advanced teacher of love is someone who recognizes that. The truth behind the story.
Now, can I do that with me? I mean,
it would be great. It would be great. As a matter of fact, the cool part about it, the Course says there's no way that something can have an effect through you without having an effect on you. So if I'm taking that attitude toward everybody around me, then that attitude is going to be an attitude that my mind automatically takes toward me. As a matter of fact, that's the best way to get to the point that my mind will apply a truth to me, is that I'm applying the truth to everybody around me. And like I said, it's not always easy in proportion to the level of specialness that you have with the person that's suffering. So therefore, it would be easier for me to take that attitude with someone that's a casual acquaintance than it would be to take that attitude with somebody that's an intimate.
Yourself is like the most special. You have to yourself. It's the hardest to apply it to yourself and have that.
That's usually the last person that, in my experience, I ever see people apply the truth to is themselves. You know, I've had people say, well, you know, you're going through something, I'm going through something. I say, well, you know, that's an illusion. But when they're going through something, you know, they're a basket case. So, okay, can you take that same attitude toward your stuff as you're taking toward my stuff? And frankly, it is easier to take it toward my stuff than your stuff. So that's why it's so cool that we get a chance to practice, because the more we practice, the more we transform our mind, the more we can take that attitude toward ourselves. So if I'm looking at the news, then it's easier for me to try to remember the truth for the people in the news than it is for me to try to remember the people that I know personally. But it's also a form of mind training. You know, I go through periods where I don't focus in on it. I go through periods that I do, you know. I mean, people say, well, I never look at the news, and I never, you know. And I understand that we go through different cycles of learning. But there are certain cycles of learning that I believe you go through where you do look at the illusion and you see it correctly, where you have other cycles where you don't look at the illusion and you go, well, I don't watch the news and I don't read the newspaper. But that doesn't make it any less not happening, you know what I'm saying, because I bury my head in the sand. You know, because the train, I'm in the middle of the railroad track and the train coming toward me, just because I put my hand on my eyes don't mean the train not coming. So, so that whole idea of I just don't look at it, then it's not there, it's kind of funny to me. But a lot of truth students take that attitude. But what they're doing is really making the illusion more real. It's so real they can't even look at it. So they think they're making it less real, but why are you running away? I'm not saying you should seek it out, but I'm also saying, why are you going out of your way to avoid it? You're still making it just as real. Either way it goes. So you have to follow your own heart on that, but at some point we have to be able to be here and see the truth while we're here without trying to pretend none of it is existing, you know. And so, you know, that's just because we're here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, we're here. You know, so.
Well, it changes though. I mean, change is happening in this every instant.
Mm-hmm.
It's changing. So our perception of change with others and self that's the mind training?
That's the mind training.
I mean, it's like now. Mm-hmm. Like now.
Like right now.
Like
right now.
It's like now.
It's like now.
Now.
It's like now.
It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so falling off of that wagon is like buying into the illusion. Sometimes
yeah, falling off the wagon is like buying into. That's what falling off the wagon is. But it still doesn't. Just because you fell off the wagon doesn't make you any less as God created you. See, that was the thing that started to help me, was when I began to understand what he said. Earl, you are loved. You are innocent. You are a child of God. Nothing can affect that. Nothing you believe, nothing you go through can affect it. Now, you want to learn the truth so you can change your perception and have more peace, but your soul is never at stake. In the old belief system that I used to be in, my very soul was at stake. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, my very soul was at stake. If not, my soul isn't ever at stake, but my peace is. And that's a different thing. You know, peace, yeah. My soul, no. That's a done deal. That's okay. Yeah. Anybody else?
So, you know, you were saying how we might see someone who appears sick or whatever, but aren't we still seeing ourselves in that? I mean, isn't that the healing that I need to have? Because it's really about how I perceive that.
Right.
So everything is really for my healing.
Yes.
For my own mind to say, you're not that.
Yes. Yeah. That's what's so cool about it.
Yeah.
And you're perceiving the truth about them, you are healing your mind at the exact same time. Yeah.
It's like a gift they show up to show us that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. It's a gift.
Yeah.
Another term I like to use for myself personally is an opportunity.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity for me to learn to look at it another way. And and I can have compassion without. I always have to remember that, you know, that true, the court says true empathy is not joining in the suffering. And when you see people that you love going through something, your first instinct is to join in the suffering rather than to remember the truth. And that's the temptation, you know, is to think that by joining in the pain, somehow you're lightening their pain, rather than to realize that you should be compassionate and then see the strength in them and remember the truth about them. Yeah. Yeah.
What is the role of or function of empathy then?
The true empathy is remembering the truth. It's just another definition of it. I'm being empathetic with you by remembering the truth with you, and then knowing I'm just like you, that just like you have your perceptions that don't always bring you peace, or your experiences that don't, you know, I have the same thing, you know. So empathy for me is more of recognizing that we're the same, but not necessarily joining in the suffering that you're going through, and remembering the truth for you, just like I would like you to remember the truth for me. As a matter of fact, the person that heals me the most is a person who remembers the truth while I go ahead and own and feel my illusion. Not try to pretend that I don't feel hurt, not to try to pretend that I don't feel frightened, but to go ahead and feel it completely, because that's how I feel. See, the being truly yourself is being honest with yourself in every moment, and you're not being honest with yourself if you feel sad and you're pretending you feel happy, or you feel afraid and you're pretending you're not, which is, again, a big temptation on the truth path. And it's to always claim. I really got scared when I started to lie to myself. I noticed years ago that I was studying the truth, and I had started to deceive myself. I had gotten to the point I would start to pretend that I didn't feel what I feel. It was one thing for me to, like, look at everybody else and try to see how, what they were going through. But I would stop. But if I was angry, I had stopped telling myself I was angry. If I was sad, I would pretend I wasn't sad. So I was having the feeling. It was there, but I was just unwilling to really be honest about it. So really, being true to yourself is to embrace how you feel in every moment, realize that all your feelings are innocent, and all your feelings are really just a reflection of your inner knowledge that you deserve to have peace. So even if I'm angry at you, why am I angry at you? Because there's some part of me that knows that I deserve to have peace in this situation, and I don't have peace in this situation. I might be going about solving it in an incorrect way, but it's still rooted in the idea that I want peace for myself. You know, even those people who are suicide bombers, you know, they still think that what they're doing is somehow going to result in them having some kind of peace, even if it's in heaven with the 80 virgins or whatever, you know, which is probably the only place 80 virgins are left. But you know, so I can kind of see the goal, you know. But that's the whole thing in a nutshell, is that we need to understand that behind even violent acts is love. It's still that somehow or another, I think what I'm doing is going to somehow relieve me and better my situation. So we all have an unconscious recognition that we deserve to be safe and that we deserve to be peaceful, even though we're in totally, we can be in disagreement about how we go about doing that. Mm-hmm.
What do you say, though? A friend of mine is going through a breakup, and she feels forced into it. And we're selling the house, and we're breaking up, and I don't want this, and I'm crying all day. And I'm kind of detached because I don't know her real well. But what I do see is, I think it is for the best, because I have met him, and she's sort of resistant to it. And she's hurting, of course she is. But part of me is sort of holding that space. And she's saying, I deserve better. And I'm thinking, yeah, I want better for you, too.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me is holding that space.
Mm-hmm.
And like you talked about last week, too, don't feel like you have to, like, solve or give all these answers. Like, maybe you don't need to say anything. But I'm not sure. I do want to say something to her, but in my head I keep thinking, this is a really good thing, and it's going to put you in a better place, and you're going to meet a better guy because you're wanting that. And you will bring that in. I mean, I wouldn't say that, but I kind of feel like, what can I do for you, or how can I help you?
That's the question. That's what you say to her. That you just answered. That's what you would say.
Yeah.
To me, if you had to say something, it would be, how can I support you?
And obviously there are situations where you do, you know, your friend loses a job and you feel really bad and it's a terrible thing and I can empathize, but then it is an interesting situation because I'm really happy for her and she's not happy.
Well, good. It's good that you're happy for her. It's good that you see her life as improving as a result. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, you're really doing all you can do. You're holding the space that she deserves happiness and she deserves, like he says here, it's not worth to the advanced teachers of God consider the forms of the sickness in which their brother believes. Because if you do that, you forget that what she goes through, no matter what it is. Because this week it's her boyfriend, next week it could be her job, next week it could be her health, next week it could be her finances. See, that's what Spirit is, I think, is trying to get us to see. Is that it doesn't really make any sense to just focus on the form, because all the forms have the same purpose, which is what? To make her doubt that she's loved. To make her doubt that she deserves love. The ego or the fearful part of her mind is trying to make fear real. Instead of love, that's the game. One part of mind is going, I want to show you that fear is real, and separation is real, and the other part of the mind is going, I want to show you that oneness and joining and unity is real, and love is real. That's really the only game going on here. It's those two games. So the fearful part of the mind comes up with a variety of things to make you think fear is real. But what we're learning through the course is that the loving part of our mind can just as much create and show us the truth. That love is real, but it's up to us to decide which part of my mind am I going to side with. Am I going to side with the love, or am I going to side with the fear? And if I side with the fear, that's also my call for love. So I don't have to beat myself up no matter which side of the pole I fall in. It is painful to go through a relationship loss if it's something that you think you value. So, you know, I think that the coolest thing is for her to be able to have her feelings. And be able to have her feelings in peace, even her feelings of sadness and her feelings of loss.
I think she is, but I don't think she gives her enough credit for it. Like, she says, I've been crying all day, and I'm thinking, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. So you really, you know, you're doing the best you can do. You're checking in.
Okay.
You know, most people don't check in. They don't check in. That course says they come up with consciously selected miracles. You know, they decide, you know, what the person needs, and then they go about trying to make sure that the person has it.
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else before we go to the next one? So you figure you know your function now? everybody know their function now? I bet you do. Now, whether or not we do it is another thing, but every one of us knows. And tell the truth, isn't it easier than the other way?
Yeah,
it really is. It's actually what we've just been told is actually easier. Because when a person's in sadness and fear and depression, they're pretty much checked out. Mm-hmm. So it's really not like you're going to reach them intellectually anyway. You won't even be able to reach them until they've had a chance to go through that feeling and let that feeling
That's
go through.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
They're in the emotion.
They're in the emotion, so rational reasoning thought is not going to be what's going to move them anyway right then. Mm-hmm. If I can be patient enough to wait, then behind them letting that feeling out, it's the truth anyway. They usually come back and tell you the truth. That's what I've noticed. If you let them get it out, they'll usually be the ones that'll go, you know, maybe it is for the best. The once they do their grieving process.
Yeah.
I'm kind of having an experience of, like, I've embraced all these ideas. And I've chosen peace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the shift started happening around me and I was kind of freaking out. And I'm like, girl, what's going on? My entire life is crumbling. And I was like, okay.
Congratulations.
I was like, I need to just stick to the piece. And so I did that, and I chose for that. And I hit, like, a whole new layer of outside, inside, trying to bring me back into fear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people were, like, attacking me with words like, your sense of entitlement is just nauseating. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, I am entitled. Right? No, not okay. So I was going into that whole like self-doubt,
mm-hmm.
and where I went with that is I was in my pain and I was feeling it and I was not trying to share it because I wanted to just maintain the energy in my own little bubble and get through it. And what I was realizing is that I just felt incredibly alone because I could not even like. I didn't want anybody else to share in what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, I felt like I had to do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, doing it alone instead of You know what I mean? Like, I really got to the alone place instead of finding my God place.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the, I'm alone, all of you people don't even, you know, like, there was nothing out here at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got into tremendous self-doubt, and that was worse than, you know, just drama with other people. The yeah, self-doubt, right. Like, that kind of empty right. place is just, right. like, a lot more...
Yeah, that's the last stage before a major awakening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just cried, and I woke up the next day. And
notice you're here,
really
you're
nice.
Here now, and you're
oh, yeah.
relatively peaceful. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like you went there, you know. It's, I read in the book, they call it being up against the wall. And they said when you're up against the wall, then the temptation is to try to go back and do something you've done before to get off the wall
mm-hmm.
instead of staying there. But if you stay there, you don't know when and how necessarily. Before you know it, you realize you're on the other side of the wall. And you'd be like, how did I get on the other side of the wall?
Right.
You know, you stayed in the truth. You didn't try to repeat your past again. You felt your feelings, but you didn't resign from the truth. You didn't release the truth. And then you go to the other side. That's one of the main purposes of my forming these, doing these advanced mind heart training seminars that I'm doing. It isn't just about working on the material. It's also about unity and relationship. It's about community. It's about my desire to connect with a group of people who do want to come together on a regular basis to go very deep into the truth and form relationships that are based on that. Because what happens when you do that is that's when reality occurs, when you don't feel alone. And it's hard to feel alone when you form a relationship with people who share your purpose, you know. And then when we go into our individual lives from that connection, we'll be amazed at the power and the strength and how centered we can stay. And so it's much deeper than just a seminar for me. It's much more powerful than that. And so I get what you're saying. And stay up against the wall, you know, which is stay in the truth no matter what. You know, keep joining whenever you can, no matter what. And most of all, keep studying, meditating, going within, and establishing that relationship with your higher self. That's the key. I couldn't imagine trying to do this by myself and on my own. So then it goes to the next section, and the next section says, well, is healing certain? First it was like, what is your function? And then it goes, is healing certain? He says, healing is always certain. It's impossible to let illusions be brought to the truth and keep the illusions, because truth demonstrates illusions have no value. The teacher of God, the teacher of love, has seen the correction of his errors in the mind of the patient, recognizing it for what it is, having accepted the atonement, which is the undoing of fear, the undoing of illusion, forgiveness for himself. He's also accepted for the patient. That's what you were just saying. As you accept it for yourself, you're accepting it for the other person. Then he goes, now, what about the people in our lives? He says, what if the patient uses sickness as a way of life? Believing healing is the way to death. When this is so, what? A sudden healing might precipitate intense depression and a sense of loss so deep that the patient might even try to destroy himself. Having nothing to live for, the person might ask for death. Healing must wait for the person's protection. Healing will always stand aside when it's seen as a threat. These are very important sentences. I'll say it again. I want to go back because that is so powerful. What if the person recognizes, what if there's a person that uses fear and conflict and drama as a way of life? He said, well, that's a person that actually believes that healing is the way to death. So when this is so, a sudden healing might precipitate intense depression and a sense of loss so deep. I've seen people act more crazy and more depressed when the truth works than I see them act sometimes when the truth doesn't. I've seen people who got more depressed when they got the relationship that the person was loving than they were when they had the relationship with the abusive person.
Because they lost their sense of identity?
Because they used sickness and unhappiness as a way of life. You know, they used the illusion as a way of life. They built their life around their past beliefs. They built their life around this old thought system. And so when they have a sudden healing, they feel a sense of loss because the whole identity that they know and that they knew, like you said, the friends you had around your old identity. You know, it looks like that I'm losing them, or it looks like they're attacking me, or it looks like, you know. So the Course is saying that healing, to me the main sentence is when he says, healing waits for our protection. So what that means to me is that I'm basically having as much healing as I can take without going into depression and a sense of loss. That everybody around me is basically as happy as they can be, no matter how unhappy they are, which is deep. So that's not the way we tend to think of it, you know. We think, oh, I just want to have complete bliss and happiness and joy. He says, well, healing must wait for your protection. If you would go through an intense depression and a sense of loss, if you had a healing, then the healing waits. The healing waits until you can receive the healing without attacking yourself. So basically, I have as much joy as I can safely have in any given moment. I have as much peace. I give myself as much peace as I can in any given moment. That's why we don't have to judge how we feel, because however we feel, that's what we feel, like you were saying, that's what we feel in this moment. If I feel sad right now, that's actually as much happiness as I can feel in this moment. But we call it sadness, but it's really as much joy as I can give myself. And I'm willing to give myself for my protection. I just understand it's for my protection. And he says, healing will always stand aside when it would be seen as a threat. You could say, love will always stand aside as long as it would be seen as a threat. One of the strangest things you might notice as you become more peaceful and loving is that instead of attracting more special relationships to you, you'll seem to attract fewer. You know, you think it's going to mean that you just be showered with all these people. And it's not usually the way that it happens at all. Because they use conflict as a way of life. Their life is built around conflict. That's why you see them hang out with the other people that join them in the drama. They're not going to be attracted to you until they want peace as much as you do. Then they'll see your value. So if you can be patient, then you will surely start to draw people with you that share your values. But it's that in-between stage that most people drop off. Because there is a stage that it does look like you're pretty much alone. But you're not really. You're just in transition.
It really only lasted 2 weeks.
Well, that's great.
Like before the whole shift and all the new people came. Like, and I thought it was going to be 6 months, a lifetime, you know?
And so this next section talks about how do you deal with the people? Like, this is like your question you just asked about how you deal with your friend.
Yeah.
It's in this paragraph. That's what I love about this book. It's almost as if the author anticipates your questions before you get to them. And if you keep reading, he'll bring it up. Like right here, he says, healing will always stand aside when healing would be seen as threat. The instant that healing is welcome, healing is there. Where healing has been given, healing will be received. What is time before the gifts of God? We have referred many times in the text to the storehouse of treasures laid up equally for the giver and receiver of God's gifts. Not one of God's gifts is lost, but for God's gifts can but increase. So here's the point that I want to make. No teacher of God should feel disappointed if the teacher of God has offered healing and it doesn't appear to be received. Don't be disappointed if you try to help somebody and it doesn't appear to be received. He says, it's not up to you to judge when your gift should be accepted. Let you be certain that your gift has been received and trust that your gift will be accepted when your gift is recognized as a blessing and not a curse. It is not our function to evaluate the outcome of our gifts. It is merely our function to give the truth, to give the love, to give the gifts. He says, once you've given the gift, he says, you've also given the outcome, because the outcome is part of the gift. No one can give if he is concerned with the result of giving. No one can give if he's concerned with the result of giving. Being concerned with the result of giving, that is a limitation on the giving itself. And neither the giver, you, nor the receiver, them, would have the gift. Trust is an essential part of giving. In fact, trust is the part that makes giving or sharing possible. Trust is the part that guarantees the giver will not lose but only gain. Who gives a gift and then remains with the gift to be sure the gift is used as the giver deems appropriate? Such is not giving, but imprisoning. I've often used the analogy of me giving you a toaster for a wedding present, and then you wake up in the morning and I'm in your kitchen waiting for you to use it, and I'm on your case if you didn't. I didn't give you a gift then, I just imprisoned you. So every time somebody gives you advice or gives you anything, but at the same time they're caught up, hung up on whether or not you use it, he says that's not a gift. You were just in prison. That's why a lot of times people don't want anybody to do it, want people to do things for them. Because they don't look at it like, you know, a gift. They look at it like an obligation. Now that you've given this to me, now what do I have to do? What do I have to give you back? You know, or am I going to, you checking to see if I've used your advice? You know, so if you really want to give the gift, he says, you don't have any concern about the result of it. Because the person will use what you told them when they see the benefit of it, they'll use it. Like in these classes, you know, I would go crazy in the early days of teaching because I was so wanted everybody to really get what I was sharing. And I really wanted them to use it. And I realized I was just imprisoning them and imprisoning myself. And it was really about, no, when they see the benefit of what the course is saying, even if that's 10 years from now, they'll use it. He said, because at that point, they're seeing it as a blessing. And when you first say it, they see it as a curse. That somehow the course is requiring some kind of a sacrifice or something that they really value. So when you give something to somebody, if you can let go of all your concern about whether or not they use it or what they do with it, then it's truly given. So that must be the way Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, is doing with us. It's giving us this truth, but it's totally unconcerned about whether or not we use it, because Spirit knows we'll use it when we see it as a blessing. But sometimes I have to remember that there's something greater than me. Because sometimes I used to think it was all about me being able to extend this truth to the people that I know who seem like they don't necessarily know it. And all of a sudden I realized that there was something that was doing me that way, that I was just as unconscious relative to the higher part of me as it can look like other people are unconscious relative to what I'm trying to share with them. So I realized that course telling me my relationship with you, it was also telling me God's relationship to me. That this is exactly what God is doing me. I'm all crying, I'm all upset about whatever I think I'm going through. Well, Christ's consciousness is totally and completely remembering that I'm not in the things that I'm going through, not joining in the suffering with me, you know, remembering the truth about me when I've forgotten, giving me gifts without being concerned about whether or not I use the gifts. You know, it's like that's why it looks like no higher being is grabbing me and forcing me to change, because Spirit is actually practicing these principles on me. So that's why no higher being is trying to force me into consciousness or force me into being more loving, because higher consciousness is actually practicing exactly what it's telling us to practice with everybody else. That's what Spirit is doing with us right now. Remembering we're not none of the stuff we're tripping out about. And it's quiet because it's just, like you said, just remembering the truth with us without saying anything. Exactly what we were told. Remember the truth about the person without saying anything. Oh, so that's why God is silent, because God's practicing the truth. And it's like, oh, maybe there's something to be learned from that. And then if it is something I need to know in words, then Spirit uses a person to give me the words I need to hear. And in most cases, the person doesn't even know that they're doing it. I can't tell you how many times people have answered prayers for me and they just thought they were talking about something else, and they would be talking about exactly what I needed to get an answer to, and they'd tell me they were talking about their cousin. And it would be no accident. It's like there's some things that are going on in my experience right now that can challenge my ability to remember the truth. And this lesson today is the answer. I mean, everything that I'm being told through this lesson today, that I just happen to be on today, is exactly what I needed to hear right now. That's no accident. That's no accident. Now, am I too addicted to my way of being that getting this answer sends me into depression? See, I'm getting another way other than what I figured out. Now, am I happy about that, or do I get depressed about that? Because it's not my answer. It's not what I would necessarily think. You know, am I so used to the way I've dealt with things that it's a way of life? So to get this new answer depresses me? Because I see that a lot in the Course, where people will get depressed by what they're hearing instead of feeling good about the fact that they're always seen as innocent and always seen as powerful and they're never alone. You think people would be jumping up and down and skipping and shouting. But most people just get quieter. And I see it in my class, especially the larger ones, all the time. I watch people get quiet. The more loving it becomes, the more subdued everybody becomes. The more loving it becomes, the more somber everybody becomes. It's weird to watch. You know, because their way, because their whole way of looking at life is adversarial. It's opposite to what they're hearing, you know. And so the ego part, the Course says, the word it uses is immobilized. That your ego becomes immobilized in the presence of love. It almost like freezes it. It just, you know, it's weird. But I see it. It's so weird to see it happen in front of me. It's like the more love I pour on the people in front of me, the more I watch this. You know, but if you go, yeah, you know, we got to be on the lookout for them people who are terrorists. Yeah, man. See, enthusiasm. What are you talking about? You know, you are love. You're innocent. You remain as God created you. There's nothing you can ever do to lose eternal love. It's wild to watch. Love will put people dead asleep. Attack. There's an adversary. You know, because he says we think life is conflict and death is peace. You know, we associate death with peace. So in a sense, the more somebody's talking peace to us, the more we believe we're going to lose. Because subconsciously, people associate peace with death. Rest in peace is what you said to dead people. Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. You can't help it. It's almost like you can't help it. That's why I tell people, don't stifle yourself, you'll blow up. Because you'll watch it. It's almost like you can't help it. The ego is not the part of us that's attracted to love. It's the part of us that's attracted to fear. So if the more we're in the presence of love, the more our ego, not us, what we think we are, goes unconscious. It'll go unconscious. But that's really ultimately going to be our protection. Because what that means is people that would attack us when we're in a loving place will go unconscious. They'll go to sleep. They'll avoid us. They won't even come around. And that's how you'll be safe in your loving mind. You simply won't attract attack. Because attack minds aren't attracted to minds full of peace. So people will have, you know, how am I going to keep people from taking advantage of me? If you're truly coming from peace, the people who would take advantage of you won't be attracted to you. They'll be attracted to other people in that same mindset. You know, so your friends who need drama, they're not attracted to you. You know, and they need to fight. So that's when they say, well, you think you're entitled. What is that? That's an attempt to engage you in conflict because they need conflict. And you're not, it's like you're starving them and you're starving your own ego. So your ego will see that anything, it's like a starving person, you know. So that means like you've been trying to give yourself peace, and you've been doing it. But then something comes up in your life that will take your peace away. Your ego will seize onto that and try to get every morsel of vitality out of that it possibly can, because it's like a starving person that's just been thrown a bone. Oh, my latest conflict. I haven't had conflict in a while. Here's my conflict. So my ego is all ready to go pounce, forget all the truth, get into the suffering, get into what? Rebuild itself. Rebuild. My conflict mind is trying to rebuild itself. And be aware of that, because that's the defense against the truth. That's what the Course calls the defense against the truth. So let me finish this last paragraph so we have both sections before we go out into the lab. So he said. So he says, it is the relinquishing of all concern about the gift that makes it truly given. That's different. And it is trust that makes true giving possible. Healing is the change of mind that God in the patient's mind is seeking for the patient, and it is God in the mind of the giver who gives the gift to the patient. So who can be, what, how can it be lost? How can it be ineffectual? How can it be wasted? God's treasure house can never be empty. If one gift is missing, it would not be full. Yet is its fullness guaranteed by God. What concern then can a teacher of God have about what becomes of his gifts? Given by God to God, who in this holy exchange can receive less than everything? So, last paragraph says, if you truly want to give a gift, what do? You relinquish all concern about it. You've given it, and so you trust that that person is going to use it at the right time. The person will use the toaster when they really want some toast. Not when I decide they need to have some toast. Okay? I gave the outcome, which is toast, when I gave them the toaster. It's just my ego that needs to be there to watch the toast pop out. Okay? Then it says, who's really doing the healing? It's the Holy Spirit in me communicating to the Holy Spirit in you. It's the love in me connecting with the love in you. It's the God in me connecting with the God in you. That's what's going to heal your friend. It's the God in you, the love in you, connecting with the love or the God in her. He says, so how could the healing be lost when it's a God to God thing? Not a me, my ego to your ego, not my personality to your personality. It's the truth in me joining with the truth in you, and that's behind the illusion. That's behind the ego. That's behind the stuff that I'm telling myself.
And that idea of if it's not a threat or if it is a threat, it helps me to not judge anyone in their illness or their sickness or their relationship, or it should be different, or you should have someone better. Because if you understand, that's a threat to her.
There you go.
To have anything better, then it's like she's doing the best she can.
There you go.
And if she wanted more, and if it was a good thing and made her happy, there would be more.
Thank you.
So she's doing the best. So it really helps me to go,
thank you.
You don't have to judge her, because
That's right. Isn't that cool? Because isn't that great to know that your mind is going to start to apply that same thing to you? So that's what turns me on about just what you just said. Because soon you're going to do that same thing about yourself. You go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay. Everything is in divine order right now. Whether I understand it or not, you know, everything's cool. Even though I don't understand how, whatever I'm going through right now, it's all part of the healing.
Yeah,
so
you
got to claim that.
And why isn't it happening? Why isn't it happening? Mm-hmm. I took it right to myself. It's like, because obviously you're threatened in some way. So
thank you.
It makes it real, even though it's the illusion. It's like, it would be there.
Yeah.
If you would let it come in, and if it was okay, it would be there.
And to add to what you're saying, it's already there. You know what I'm saying? There are already loving relationships available to her right now, today, all of us. It's just a matter of, are we willing to remove the blocks that would allow us to be aware that what we want is already there? And that's what's so cool. That's why we're guaranteed happiness. Because it's not like we're trying to create something that doesn't exist. We're in the process of trying to recognize what already does exist. But we just don't see it because of the fears that we have. That's much better than me trying to get a car. It's a lot better than somebody tell me, I already have bought you a car, and when you're ready to pick up the keys, just come by and get the keys and go drive off in the car. See, we got it all reversed. We think of something that we try to go out and make it, and the truth is saying, no, anything you desire has already been created. It's about you letting go of the blocks to receiving it, and that's what forgiveness truly is. So I'm going to stop here. As usual, it's 1 o'clock. I'm going to do the love offering. Thank you for sharing with me and Unity Temple.
Blessings. If you want to do the seminars, like I said, 20 people. It's the first paid 20 people. It's $50. It's from 10 to 3. And it's filling up fast. So, matter of fact, I've been surprised at how many people jumped on it. So if it's something that you want to do, go ahead and pre-register as soon as you can. And let's go into this new level, because the next level is beyond what we can do by ourselves. And I won't feel so rushed. That's the thing that I'm most looking forward to. It's not to feel like I'm locked into this 60-minute communication. Because it's just not enough time to go where I'd like to go. You know. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock is the next class. And then Sunday at 1 o'clock. I'm not concerned about it. What about that? When are they going to use them? There you go, you know. And the other part was what? What's our function? To remember the truth for them while they've forgotten it, you know. And if you do that, the Course promises that then we'll see the miracles. Then we'll see the healing. All right? You ready to go out into the lab? Appreciate y'all. You're awesome. You're blessed, and you're not alone. So when you're scared, think about these cute faces. And if you don't know each other, it'd be a great opportunity.